101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
What's going on? What's going on? Tanya Dohaskigo, then on Zewa Dahusadaje, Ungahuan, and Hadiwa Nodus, Nene Aboriginal Voices, Oscar Dewa Nyawar Oscar, Ne Jota FM, CFRC.
And you're tuned to CFRC 101.9 FM. This is Aboriginal Voices on CFRC. Ani, Nich Kimang, Doug Farquhar, Indigenous, Minwa, Sean Story, Esna Minwa, and Ishnabi Nuewin. Aboriginal Voices on this gorgeous Tuesday evening. It's amazing. This is June. Can you believe it? Temperatures are so perfect. I think it got all the way up to 18 degrees Celsius. And I hope that was okay for you, Sean.
It's
22. Ooh, 22.
18.
How did that happen? It was 18 in my place when I came in. That was okay. Anyway, we're looking at...
Did you not notice the heat out there?
No.
The 5 degrees extra?
Look what I'm wearing. My fleecy.
I do have one of those out in the car. Okay. I would have brought it, but I was in such a hurry.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Tonight on Aboriginal Voices, it's jam-packed. We've got to...
Ask me why.
Oh, why what? Why you didn't bring your fleecy?
No, it was a long trip.
Oh.
Because, I got stuck behind every single slowpoke transport truck.
Ah, okay.
And then...
Was one of them a milk truck?
It was some kind of a liquid truck.
Okay. I sent him out early.
There was a liquid truck. There was a guy hauling stones. Like the big kind.
Yeah.
Not. Are those rocks? Maybe those are rocks.
Well, the big flat stones?
You know, like landscaping kind.
Oh, okay. Not the kind
you
use for building.
They're going up a hill.
Oh, yes.
And it's like, oh, gosh.
That's all right. You're going to be fine.
I broke some laws getting here.
Oh, okay. I am glad you arrived before that we said here, the mic's on.
Look, Chance is over there.
Oh, this is a busy spot today.
Yeah.
You missed all the good music.
Now we have somebody in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Who?
Marika.
She can't say her name?
Can I speak?
Sure, you can
Why
speak
not?
All you want, yeah. Come over closer to the mic.
Come on over here, Marika.
Sorry,
Oh, no, that's fine.
No, you're a guest here today.
I'm filming clips of this program for our social media. So if you see this on social media, this was the show.
Is that Instagram?
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. We'll be Instagram.
All those fake sounding places.
So I won't get a chance to see them.
Oh, no, you won't. Anyways,
you're going to tell me after how to buy a new phone.
Gosh. Ask.
That's all right. Hey, back to what's happening today. We've got a couple of listeners who are keen on hearing more because we're going to do a dedication to...
More about what?
To Chris Dirksen's work.
Oh, gosh. Really?
Yeah. One more, because this is the third album that was put out, and we mentioned that.
Oh, that's right. Posthumously, right?
Yes, yeah.
This would be posthumous.
And so we're looking at... sharing that. Big shout out to Rachel. She's in town and sent us some information. June 21st at Skelton Park. That's
it. Oh, yeah. Wyatt?
Hey, you read the, same things.
I pay attention. Today I did anyways.
Oh, good.
Wyatt C. Louis.
And I'm just looking to see what time on stage it's
You need a phone because yours got a broken screen.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I don't really remember Skelton Park, Wyatt.
There you are. Wyatt C. Louis.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Okay. And you can go to...
WyattCLouis.com.
Mm-hmm. He's a Cree singer-songwriter, and he's going to be at the... Skeleton Park Arts Festival on Saturday, June 21st, 4 p.m. On the main stage.
You know what, Douglas? I did happen to call up his name on the, what do you call it? The interwebs here.
Okay.
And weirdly enough, I was able to spell the Wii properly.
Oh, yeah, because there are several ways.
Yeah, there he is there. Mm-hmm. And I listened to a song, a tune today. And what was it called? I'll tell you in a moment.
Would you like to play it?
No.
No.
Carefree, that's the name of it. Mm. Yeah, we can play it if you want.
Okay. You bring it up and see if there are any ads, and if there aren't, then we're fine.
Like we're giving away our, I don't think he's got ads.
Okay,
he's good. Got 424 subscribers. So people within our listening distance, maybe go up and subscribe.
Listening.
He is pretty good. It is got a sound that does not sound like anything other in the you know, the world of First Nations music. And it was surprising, because looking at him, I thought to myself, huh, well, he's gonna sound like this.
No,
didn't sound like that at all.
You jumped to conclusions.
Always with me. So the book, wait a minute, judge a book by its cover?
There you go.
Did not work this time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And he's what do you call it? Introspective.
Oh. You did listen to his songs.
Well, I listened to
it. What's it called?
This one's called Carefree. I don't know from what it's on, but this one's called Carefree.
Okay, so
he's been around for a few years, I think.
But this is new music for Aboriginal Voices tonight.
This would be new music for us, and I was surprised. But thankfully, Rachel can find these people for us.
Yeah,
they're like in her wheelhouse.
She's always thinking. That's good. Okay. All right. Play why it's
good. You want me to play this guy?
Yes, please.
All right.
Warmer nights around us, and I'm calling out. How's it hanging, Sue? What you dance about? Lift them up with spirit. I wish I knew the songs. Let them guide so they hear it. Perhaps I'm telling it wrong. So wrong, but when it hits, struck by lightning, and you're carefree with pounding drums to take it home. Night falls hard on these dusty roads. Carefree. There's no weapons here, digging roots on a full moon. What do they have to say now? On the front page news. Tell me, is it a crime to be so carefree with pounding drums to take you home? Night falls hard on these dusty roads. Carefree, clear. still reaching out for a hand when all I wanna feel is carefree.
Well, there you go, Rachel. Thank you very much. That is a song called Carefree, and it was by Wyatt C. Louis. And Sean did a great job of introducing that, and the fact that he was listening to it since you gave it to him, that's great. Always appreciate listeners sending in their information and saying, hey, check this one out, or try this, or... See what you're doing with this new music. So we're looking at a number of other items throughout the day. A fellow named Eric Epler, and he has been a publicist, and he's been sending us Aboriginal Voices team a number of people and the musicians who were. Getting started or at least introducing themselves to us. So we're going to actually, he offered an opportunity for us to do audio interviews, telephone interviews. So we're going to see if we can set up a few for July. Everything's booked for the next 2 weeks. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens here. So, you know, and in fact, we're going to have a changeover of seasons coming up. Yeah, June 21st, that's going to be the beginning of summer. And wow, look at how fast this has gone. You know, spring has gone so quickly that, almost as fast as the weeds have been growing in my yard. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. The other thing, too, is... that we're going to let Rachel know that she's got time to get her dessert organized and served because we're going to do the Chris Dirksen tribute sometime after 6:30 tonight. And we'll share that and see how that goes. What I'd like to do, though, is send you off to listen to Alan Gray Eyes. And he did a piece a number of years ago for a special project called A Day to Listen. And they're getting ready for a Day to Listen for 2026. And it'll be released just before the 21st, I believe. And all of their interviews and conversations with many Indigenous folk across the country. And I know Asanabe has been doing some work. Shoshana Kish has been doing as hosts to talk to some of the people in their sphere. So we're going to go to Alan, and we'll give everybody an opportunity to hear a little bit. He's probably about between now and 6:30.
A Day to Listen.
It's Jason Abbey here, one of your hosts for A Day to Listen 2023. Please welcome my guest, Alan Gray Eyes, who is a new friend. He's a festival director and does a lot of project management with Indigenous artists across Turtle Island. Alan, would you like to introduce yourself and where you come from?
Yes, sir. My name is Alan Gray Eyes. I'm a festival director. I'm based out of Winnipeg, Manitoba, And I've actually been working in the music industry since 2005, and so I've seen a lot of changes and a lot of great progress since then.
Yeah, that was actually one of my questions for later, but maybe we'll just kind of start on that then. You have been in the industry for a while, and you know, you've seen the evolution of how Indigenous artists are treated in the industry, and you know, how we have a seat at the table, and you've kind of been a huge part of that evolution as well, in advocating for better treatment. You know, what are some of the major differences you've seen in that treatment since when you started to now?
Yeah, when I started in the music industry back in 2005, there wasn't a lot of black and brown faces at any of these music industry events, any conferences, any workshops, panel discussions, and definitely not at any of the concerts or festivals. And so over the last, I guess, 18 years, I've seen a representation skyrocket. And it got to the point where I think you were there. You definitely were at the International Indigenous Music Summit, where it was predominantly black and brown folks coming together discussing music. And I think that's super valuable. And you know what? I don't feel alone anymore, which is really great.
Yeah, and I feel like this has kind of created this wave of kind of people really stepping into that. And, you know, it kind of ties into, you know, the theme of this year's chat, which is reclaiming Indigenous identity, you know, Indigenous excellence, past, present, and future. And I feel like in an Indigenous identity in music or the arts comes with a bunch of responsibilities and not just, you know, a bunch of entitlements like grants, performance spots, and awards and whatnot. You know, what are some of the responsibilities that have been given to you, and what are some of the responsibilities that, you know, you've learned about on your own?
I think, like, the responsibilities are very specific to the situations you're in. I've always felt like it depends on the elder or the matriarch or whoever is leading the work. You're kind of informally assigned a role, I've learned to just adapt and follow the lead. And that's where I feel most comfortable, to be honest, is following the lead of our elders and matriarchs. That being said, I've come to learn that there are some, maybe these aren't definitive, but I think, like, there are some universal responsibilities, and that's accountability. You're responsible to the community you're participating in. If they call you to task, then you've got to answer. I think there's a responsibility to, you know, represent Indigenous people in a good way and to tell the stories that you were given. I'm really proud to see, like, what you're doing with your grandfather's story, because quite honestly, I didn't have a strong relationship with my grandfathers, and so I don't feel like it would be right for me to take their story and to share it, but I'm really happy to see. It's really heartwarming to see what you're doing with your grandfather's story, so representing Indigenous people and telling stories in a good way, kind of the universal responsibilities we're given.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that means a lot. I think that, you know, reciprocity is one of those universal principles for Indigenous folks around the world. You know, how do you practice that on the business side of your music, and how have you received it from others?
Yeah, I think reciprocity is one of those really important pieces, and I'm often reminded of a teaching that Merrick Tyler's mom gave to him when, I can't remember what project we were working on together, and she said, you know, you've given enough when it starts to hurt a little bit. And so I carry that into everything I do on the business side, and so that could be performance offers that I send to artists for the festival. It could be for copyright splits that I coach or suggest to the artists I'm working with. And again, it's about giving back what you receive. And for other references, I think it's a great idea for listeners to just Google or search out the Dish with One Spoon Treaty. There's a lot of reciprocity in that treaty, and it's just a great way to operate. And I think, like, the music industry would be a better place if we all practiced more reciprocity as opposed to extraction or exploitation.
You know, you work in artist management, so, you know, you work with, like, a lot of people just kind of starting to get into the music industry, a lot of Indigenous artists. You know, what's some advice you give to some, you know, young Indigenous artists trying to get into the music industry now?
Yeah, I'm really happy to tell you that over the last 18 years, I've really tested a lot of ideas for artist development. And I feel like the artist that I'm working with right now, Kaylee Watts, we took a long time just helping her develop as a songwriter. Good music matters most. And so starting with the songwriting, I'm also a big fan of Malcolm Gladwell's idea of 10,000 hours to master your craft. And so, again, with Kaylee Watts and her development, it's been a lot of just co-writing. And we took the opportunity over the pandemic to do 2 years of co-writing grants. And so she wrote with yourself. She wrote with William Prince, Samantha Crane, a number of artists from Canada and the U.S. And I'm really happy. We've got her albums mixed and mastered and ready to go. And so I'm excited to see how this approach to artist development is going to work.
And to follow up on some of those previous answers there, you know, how have you navigated some of those platforms and opportunities that have come with this work to amplify the work we and other, you know, artists are doing?
I think it's really important to manage your physical health, your family health, and your mental health. That being said, there's a lot of benefit in working with Indigenous people on your team. I'm often reminded of Ta-Nehisi Coates's Between the World and Me. There is a line in there, and it basically says that you find comfort in people that understand the length of the road you've traveled because they've had to walk it themselves. And so I think, like, when you're working with an Indigenous team, as an Indigenous artist, they're going to understand how challenging it is for you to not only develop a financial literacy, but also they're going to understand that you're oftentimes not operating with the same safety net as your Canadian counterparts. Honestly, a lot of the amplification comes from personal relationships in the music industry. I remember a quote, it's not about who you know, it's about who knows you. And so over the last 18 years of my career, I've really made an effort to do a lot of the in-person networking at conferences, shake a lot of hands, buy a lot of coffees and meals for people. And I find like that gives me the ability to, you know, call on a friend when there's a music project being released or a video or we need some marketing support. Then oftentimes they're going to amplify the work that you're doing in the present and future.
Or if you're traveling through town and need a couch. What does reclaiming Indigenous identity look like to you?
I think identity is tied to the land. And I think identity is also tied to the strength of your family. I spend a lot of time listening to audiobooks, listening to podcasts, and I try to take in as many panels and discussions as possible. Just hearing ideas, that's how I learn, is through listening. And if colonization is the process of destroying Indigenous families to access the land, decolonization is the process of strengthening Indigenous families. And through the strengthening of Indigenous families, we can reclaim our identities, reclaim our language, reclaim our culture. I often think of the loss of lullabies. We have multiple generations that simply didn't grow up with lullabies in their language. And to think of that, multiple generations who were never comforted when they were falling asleep, multiple generations that didn't have the love of a parent or a caregiver, and how that has affected them, but also how it affects their ability to parent and to provide care to their children in the future. And I think that's where you and I are. We are part of that generation that hasn't really benefited from lullabies. And so, again, reclaiming identity is reintroducing lullabies and reintroducing a lot of the love and care that you know, was taken from us through the process of colonization.
This program, we're in conversation for, that will celebrate Indigenous identity on radio stations across Turtle Island. I'm wondering, what does the word reconciliation mean to you?
Reconciliation is about having non-Indigenous partners suffer with us. And what I mean is that as an Indigenous festival, as an Indigenous organization, there's a lot of inequalities. We're not even allowed to apply for operating grants from the provincial or municipal governments. And I think, like, in some cases at the national level as well. And so not being able to have that same level of security, that same ability to make promises to artists, same ability to make promises to corporate sponsors, puts us at a significant disadvantage. And so reconciliation is about having our non-Indigenous allies and partners or counterparts suffer with us, but also do the work and maybe take a step back from the opportunities or the spaces they've been occupying and give us an opportunity as well. I really wish that our generation and the generation that came before us had the ability to inherit incredible festivals, inherit incredible events, and to just build from the organizational experience within those years of running and delivering programming. But we couldn't. Honestly, a lot of these festivals and what's happening in the music industry right now was launched while residential schools were still running in Canada. And so again, I think for me, right in this moment, reconciliation is about asking people to suffer with us. And like, I think representation on stage is important, but representation off stage is just as important. And there's a lot of organizations right now that have Indigenous boards, but are led by non-Indigenous people. The non-Indigenous people are the ones making most of the money. And I think that's a significant problem as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting now, you know, like, I come from a place where my mother wanted me to try and hide the fact that I was Indigenous because, you know, in some cases it could be dangerous, you know. And now it's kind of crazy that people want to be Indigenous now. And sometimes there's people kind of stepping into these spaces. There's been some, you know, conflicts in the past with people stepping into these spaces, maybe for not always the best reasons.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of value in our experience as an Indigenous person. There is a problem with people self-identifying as an Indigenous person, but not having a lot of any of that value. We see that in academia. We see that in the arts a lot. For me, as a festival director, as a programmer, for residencies and professional development opportunities, I'm starting to become really more apprehensive to just take people at their word, because I think the harm comes when these non-Indigenous people who self-identify set an unrealistic standard for the rest of us. And what I mean by that is that they're able to operate at a higher level. They come in without all of the baggage of residential school survivors in their family, without the baggage of family members who are struggling with addiction. And it's not to say that the Indigenous experience is defined by struggle, but I do think that when you don't have any of those responsibilities to family members, then you're able to set an unrealistic standard that employers or funders or award shows think is attainable. And honestly, I think a lot of the work that I do is to challenge the status quo and to create ladders or open doors for people that are facing systemic barriers, that are facing a lot of these challenges that come with the legacy of the residential schools in Canada.
And I know that's been a big part of the conversation as well, like you're getting access to the resources. What are the systems in place for people to decide, like, who deserves these resources? You know, I would think of granting the have-nots, like people who wouldn't otherwise be able to kind of access or be able to, like, have the money to go to studio or have the money to get this marketing their project. So who are the people who are kind of deciding who gets these grants?
I don't think our generation has inherited a set of rules for self-identifying or deciding who is Indigenous and who is not, or who deserves these opportunities and resources. And so what I think we can do is reference the Dish with One Spoon Treaty and the idea of just taking as much as we need and always leaving enough for other people. And I think, again, if you don't have those values, if you were raised outside of the Indigenous community, raised to just simply exploit or do for yourself, that's a problem. That's a problem for our community. That's another form of harm that, you know, self-identifying people who don't have the experience or actual family ties bring to our community again.
Well, thank you for that, Alan. Thank you so much for being with us for A Day to Listen this year. To find out more about Alan Graez and his festival and work, head to adaytolisten.ca.
A Day to Listen, in partnership with the Gord Downie and Cheney Wenjack Fund. Learn how you can take reconciliation at adaytolisten.ca.
Don't live by the rules. Wolves don't live by the rules. don't live by the rivers. Valleys to hills, you can hear the cry. They have to fight to stay alive. No one can change it. Mother Nature knows the reason why. Oh, wolves don't live by the rules. Oh, wolves don't live by the rules.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could volunteer with Canada's oldest campus radio station? Well, sign up to volunteer with CFRC 101.9 FM today. We're always looking for new volunteers, and we offer a free training program, so no experience in radio production is necessary. You can start your own radio show or podcast, contribute to our news collective, help us sort through music sent to us by record labels and artists, help plan events, record PSAs for us, and even more. Reach out to our programming manager, Alex Fernandez, via email at programs@cfrc.ca for more information, or visit our website at cfrc.ca/volunteer and sign up today.
Years and they're still letting us near microphones.
It's true. We've got the music, the stories, and absolutely no filter.
From deep cuts to guilty pleasures, if it made noise in the last three decades,
we're probably playing it and maybe laughing about it.
This is 30 Years in Nonsense.
Hosted by Terry and Sherry Doherty.
Only on CFRC 101.9 FM, Kingston's campus and community radio.
Turn it up
and embrace the nonsense.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Can get you down when you try to call her.
Well, there you go. That was Isque with Soldier. Thinking, Sean, that we're going to do our Indigenous soundscapes.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do the Indigenous soundscapes.
Yeah, this is basically where we explore evolving or boundary-pushing world of modern Indigenous audio art. That's what we're going to be doing. And one of the things today is the focus on the heartbeat of a masterpiece. We're going to pay a tribute to Juno-nominated Cree Mennonite cellist and composer Chris Dirksen and her groundbreaking third studio album called Orchestral Powwow.
Oh, okay. So Dirksen, she's described herself as a genre defier. And one listen to this album proves it. Orchestral Powwow isn't just a fusion, it's a brilliant collision. It takes the structured classical world of the cello and pairs it with the raw ancestral power of the powwow drum and singers. Let us start with a track that perfectly captures the communal energy. This is Round Dance. And we're back, Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
So this was for, can you hear that inclusive spirit?
I could.
Of the round dance well, right there.
Didn't you feel it?
The cello handles the rhythmic looping melody mimicking the steps of the dancers, while the northern voice powwow groups ground the entire piece. It's an innovation to step into the circle. Oh, invitation.
Mm.
Or innovation.
Both.
Because, I mean, let's face it.
How often have you heard a cello played and, with the powwow drum?
I think we should
singers.
Hear a little bit more of that.
We have another one coming
it
up.
It might be like, yeah. Anyways, Dirksen, though, doesn't just invite you in, she challenges you. The album moves fluidly between moments of joy and moments of fierce resilience. Perhaps nowhere in that resilience is louder than in the track War Cry.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the cello stops being just a classical instrument. It becomes a weapon of sonic expression. The bow strokes are aggressive, the vocals are piercing, and the tension is electric. Listen to the sheer power of Chris Dirksen's War Cry. Play the thing.
So not only are we all indigenous composers, we are all prairie indigenous-based composers and have deep roots in the prairies. And for me, that was really important to bring that to the table today. And I titled it something else. And then the marketing came out. And then they're like, love is a battlefield. And I was like, uh-oh, I'm married. So I decided to bring my wife. Rebecca Benson, please join the stage. We sing together in many different things, and we're going to do an older song of mine called War Cry.
Well, Sean, you know, that was War Cry, and a very powerful track. And it actually, it holds your attention, I believe. Caught yours.
Did it catch my attention? Yes, mm-hmm. Douglas.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of one of those sonic pieces that we don't really think about Indigenous art being like that.
No, we don't. We don't. You know why?
Why is that?
Society has pigeonholed us, Doug.
Oh, no.
What are you doing?
Hit enter.
Quit touching my keyboard, Doug.
Yeah, just kind of keeping it alive.
Pigeonholed us. Yeah. What do they call that? Typecast.
Ooh. Wow. Okay.
Pigeonholed and typecast, but no. Dirksen come out and said, no, that's not what I'm going to do.
No.
I'm going to be different.
I'm going to use an entire symphony.
Yeah. I learned how to play this cello. I'm going to show you how.
Well, you wait for the next song.
Okay. So the next song is Spider Dance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you look at this incredible album, and we turn to the track that showcases Dirksen's intricate composition skills. It's a fan favorite called Spider Dance. In this piece, the cello mimics the quick, skittering movements of a spider